Very well, sir, I promise. Well, there was a group of people, a cult, you might call them, they come to disrepute. I know, the Whitmanites. They? How did you know? From Mary? No, she couldn't have. She didn't know herself. No, not from Mary, I just figured it out. He looked at me with odd respect. Maybe I've been underestimating you, son. As you say, the Whitmanites. Mary was one of them, as a kid in Antarctica. Wait a minute, I said. They left Antarctica in... The wheels buzzed in my mind and the number came up. In 1974. Surely. What about it? But that would make Mary around 40 years old. She can't be. Do you care? Huh? Why, no, but she can't be. She is, and she isn't. Just listen. Chronologically, her age is about 40. Biologically, she is in her middle 20s. Subjectively, she is even younger, because she doesn't remember anything. Not to know it, earlier than 1990. What do you mean? That she doesn't remember, I can understand. She never wants to remember. But what do you mean by the rest? Just what I said. She is no older than she is because... You know that room where she started to remember? She spent 10 years, and probably more, floating in suspended animation in just such a tank as that. Time was when I was immune to emotional shocks. But as I get older, I don't get tougher. I get softer. Being in love has a lot to do with it, too. The thought of my Mary, my beloved Mary, swimming in that artificial womb, neither dead nor alive, but preserved like a pickled grasshopper, was too much for me. I heard the old man saying, "Take it easy, son, she's all right." I said, "Go ahead." Mary's overt history was simple, although mystifying. She had been found in the swamps near Kaiserville, at the North Pole of Venus, a little girl who could give no account of herself, and who knew only her name, Alukire. Nobody spotted the significance of the name, and a child of her apparent age could not be associated with the Whitmanites debacle in any case. The 1980 supply ship had not been able to find any survivor of their new Zion colony. Its plantations had returned to the swamp. The dwellings were ruptured shells, hidden in rank growth. More than 10 years of time, and more than 200 miles of jungle separated the little waif of Kaiserville from the godstruck colonists of New Zion. At that time, an unaccounted-for Earth child on Venus was little short of incredible. Like finding the cat locked in the icebox, it called for explanation. But there was no one around with the intellectual curiosity to push the matter. Kaiserville still does not have a sweet reputation. In those days, it was made up of miners, doxies, company representatives of the Two Planets Corporation, and nothing else. I don't suppose that shoveling radioactive mud in the swamps leaves much energy for a wonder. Apparently she grew up using poker chips for toys and calling every woman in Crib Row Mother or Auntie. In turn, they shortened her name to Lucky. The old man did not go into detail about who paid her way back to Earth and why, and he avoided my questions. The real question was where she had been from the time New Zion was eaten up by the Venerian jungle, and just what had happened to the colony. The only record of those things was buried in Mary's mind, locked tight with terror and despair. Sometime before 1980, about the same time as the flying saucer reports from Russia-Siberia, or a year or so earlier. The Titans had discovered the new Zion colony. If you place it one Saturn year earlier than the invasion of Earth, the time fits fairly well. It does not seem likely that the Titans were looking for Earthmen on Venus. More probably, they were scouting Venus, as they had long scouted Earth. Or they may have known just where to look. We know that they kidnapped Earthmen at intervals over the course of two or more centuries. They may have captured someone on Earth whose brain could tell them where to find the new Zion colony. Mary's dark memories could contain no clue to that. Mary saw the colony captured, saw her parents turned into zombies who no longer cared for her. Apparently she herself was not possessed, or she may have been possessed and turned loose, the Titans finding a weak and ignorant young girl an unsuitable slave. In any case, for what was to her baby mind an endlessly long time, she hung around the slave colony, unwanted, uncared for, but unmolested, scavenging like a mouse for her living. On Venus, the slugs were moving in to stay. Their principal slaves were Venerians, and the new Zion colonists were only incidental. It is sure that Mary saw her parents being placed in suspended animation, for later use in the invasion of Earth? Probably, but not certain. In due course, she herself was grabbed and placed in the tanks. Inside a Titan ship? At a Titan base on Venus itself? More probably the latter, as when she awoke, she was still on Venus. There are many such gaps. Were the slugs that rode the Venerians identical with the slugs which rode the colonists? Possible, since both Earth and Venus have oxycarbon economy. The slugs seem to be endlessly protean, but they surely have to adapt themselves to the biochemistry of their hosts. Had Venus an oxysilicon economy like Mars, or a fluorine economy, the same parasite type could not possibly have fed on both. But the gist of the matter lay in the situation as it was when Mary was removed from the artificial incubator. The Titan invasion of Venus had failed, or was failing. Almost certainly she was possessed as soon as they removed her from the tank. But Mary had outlived the slug that possessed her. Why had the slugs died? Why had the invasion of Venus failed? It was for clues to these that the old man and Dr. Steelton had gone fishing in Mary's brain. I said, "Is that all?" He answered, "Isn't that enough?" "It raises as many questions as it answers," I complained. "Of course there's more," he told me, "a great deal more. But you aren't a Venerian expert of any sort, nor a psychologist, so you won't be called on to evaluate it. I've told you what I have, so that you will know why we have to work on Mary, and so that you won't question her about it. Be good to her, boy. She's had more than her share of grief." I ignored the advice. I can get along or not get along with my own wife without help, thank you. "What I can't figure out," I answered, "is why you ever had Mary linked up with flying saucers in the first place. I can see now that you took her along on that first trip to Iowa on purpose. You were right, granted, but why? And don't give me any malarkey." The old man himself looked puzzled. "Son, do you ever have hunches?"
"Lord, yes."
"What is a hunch?"
It's a belief that something is so or isn't so, without evidence. Or a premonition that something is going to happen. Or a compulsion to do something.
Sloppy definitions. I call a hunch the result of automatic reasoning below the conscious level, on data you did not know you possessed.
Sounds like the black cat in the coal cellar at midnight. You didn't have any data, not then. Don't tell me that your unconscious mind works on data you are going to get next week. I won't believe it.
But I did have data.
Hmm? What's the last thing that happens to a candidate before he is certified as an agent in our section? The personal interview with you.
No, no.
Oh, the trance analysis. I had forgotten hypnoanalysis for the simple reason that the subject never remembers it. He's off somewhere else. Wherever it is you go when you're asleep.
You mean you had this data on Mary, then? It wasn't a hunch at all?
No, again. I had some. A very little of it. Mary's defenses are strong. And I had forgotten what little I knew in my conscious memory. But I knew that Mary was the agent for this job. Later on, I played back her hypno interview. Then I knew that there must be more. We tried for it, and did not get it. But I knew that there had to be more.
I thought it over.
You must have been pretty cock certain that it was worth digging out. You should put her over the bumps to get it.
I had to, I'm sorry.
Okay. Okay. I waited a moment, then said, look, what was there in my hypno record? That's not a proper question.
Nuts.
And I couldn't tell you if I would. I've never listened to your analysis, son.
Huh?
I had my deputy play it, then asked him if there were anything in it which I should know. He said there wasn't, so I never played it.
So?
Well, thanks. He merely grunted, but I felt warmer toward him than I had in a long time. Dad and I have always managed to embarrass each other. The slugs had died from something they contracted on Venus. That much we knew, or thought we knew. We weren't likely to get another chance in a hurry to collect direct information, as a dispatch came in while the old man and I were still talking, telling us that Rexton had finally ordered the Past Christian saucer bomb to keep it from falling back into the hands of the Titans. I think that the old man had hoped to get at those human beings whom we knew to be inanimate prisoners in that ship, find some way to breathe life into them, and question them. Well, that chance was gone. What they could dig out of Mary had better be the answer. Assuming that some infection peculiar to Venus was fatal to slugs but not fatal to humans, at least Mary had lived through it, then the thing to do was to test them all and determine which one. Just dandy. It was like examining every grain of sand on a wide beach to locate the one with square edges. The problem was somewhat simplified by there being no need to check the Venus diseases known to be fatal to Earthmen. Perhaps it had been one of such, but if so, no matter. We could as well use smallpox. But the list of diseases native to Venus which kill Earthmen is surprisingly short, and the list of those which are not fatal but merely nastily annoying is very long. From the standpoint of a Venerian bug, we must be too strange a diet to suit his taste. If a Venerian bug has a viewpoint, which I doubt. McIlvain's silly ideas notwithstanding. The problem was made harder by the fact that the types of diseases native to Venus, which were represented by living cultures on Earth, were strictly limited in number. I.e., the grain of sand we sought might not be on this beach. To be sure, such an omission could be repaired. In a century or so of exploration and research on a strange planet. In the meantime, there was beginning to be a breath of frost in the air. Schedule suntan could not go on forever. 29. They had to go back where they hoped the answer was, into Mary's brain. I did not like it, but I could not stop it. She did not appear to know why she was being asked to submit over and over again to hypnotics. Or perhaps she would not tell. She seemed serene, but the strain showed. Circles under her eyes, things like that. Finally, I went to the old man and told him that it had to stop. "You know better than that, son," he said mildly. "The hell I do. If you haven't got what you want from her by now, you'll never get it." "Have you any idea how long it takes to search all the memories in a person's mind, even if you limit yourself to a particular period? It takes exactly as long as the period itself. What we need, if it's there at all, may be subtle." "If it's there at all," I repeated. "You don't know that it is. See here, if Mary miscarries as a result of this, I'll break your neck personally." "And if we don't succeed," he answered gently, "you will wish to heaven that she had. Or do you want to raise up kids to be hosts to Titans?" I chewed my lip. "Why didn't you send me to the USSR as you planned to, instead of keeping me around?" "Oh, that. In the first place, I want you here with Mary, keeping her morale up, instead of acting like a spoiled brat. In the second place, it isn't necessary, or I would have sent you." "Huh? What happened? Did some other agent report in?" He stood up and started to leave. "If you would ever learn to show a grown-up interest in the news of the world, you would know." I said, "Huh?" again. But he did not answer. He left. I hurried out of there and brought myself up to date. My one-track mind has never been able to interest itself in the daily news. For my taste, this dinning into the ears and eyes of trivia somewhere over the horizon is the bane of so-called civilization and the death of serious thinking. But I do miss things. This time I had managed to miss the first news of the Asiatic plague. I'd had my back turned on the second biggest news story of the century. The continent-wide epidemic of the Black Death since the 17th century. I could not understand it. Communists are crazy, granted. But I had been behind the curtain enough to know that their public health measures were as good as ours, and even better in some ways, for they were carried out by the numbers and no nonsense tolerated. And a country has to be, quite literally, lousy to permit the spread of plagues. Rats, lice, and fleas. The historical vectors. In such respects, the commissars had even managed to clean up China to the point, at least, that bubonic plague and typhus were sporadically endemic rather than epidemic. Now both plagues were spreading like gossip across the whole Sino-Russo-Serbian axis, to the point where the Soviet government system had broken down, and pleas were being sent via the space stations for UN help. What had happened? Out of my own mind, I put the pieces together. I looked up the old man again. "Boss, there were slugs behind the curtain." "Yes." "You knew?" "Well, for Christ's sake, we'd better do something fast or the whole Mississippi Valley will be in the shape that Asia is in. Just one rat, one little rat." I was thinking back to my own time among the slugs, something I avoided doing when possible. The Titans did not bother about human sanitation. My own master had not caused me to bathe, not once. I doubt if there had been a bath taken between the Canadian border and New Orleans since the slugs dropped the masquerade as unnecessary. Lice, fleas. The old man sighed. "Maybe that's the best solution. Maybe it's the only one." "You might as well bomb them, if that's the best we have to offer. It would be a cleaner way to die." "So it would. But you know that we won't. As long as there is a chance of cleaning out the vermin without burning down the barn, We'll keep on trying. I mulled it over at great length. We were in still another race against time. Fundamentally, the slugs must be too stupid to keep slaves. Perhaps that was why they moved from planet to planet. They spoiled what they touched. After a while, their hosts would die out, and then they needed new hosts. Theory. Just theory. I brushed it aside. One thing was sure. What had happened behind the curtain would happen in Zone Red unless we found a way to kill off the slugs. And that mighty soon. Thinking about it, I made up my mind to do something I had considered before. Force myself into the mind-searching sessions being conducted on Mary. If there were something in her hidden memories that could be used to kill slugs, possibly I might see it where others had failed. In any case, I was going in, whether Steelton and the old man liked it or not. I was tired of being treated like a cross between a prince consort and an unwelcome child. 30. Since our arrival, Mary and I had been living in a cubicle about the size of a bass drum. It had been intended for one junior officer. The laboratory had not been planned for married couples. We were as crowded as a plate of smorgasbord, but we didn't care. I woke up first the next morning and made my usual quick check to see that a slug had not gotten to her. While I was doing so, she opened her eyes and smiled drowsily. "Go back to sleep," I said. "You've got another 30 minutes." But she did not go back to sleep. After a while, I said, "Mary, do you know the incubation period for bubonic plague?" She answered, "Should I know? One of your eyes is slightly darker than the other." I shook her. "Pay attention, wench. I was in the laboratory last night, doing some rough figuring. As I get it, the slugs must have moved in on our commie pals at least 3 months before they invaded us." "Yes, of course." "You knew. Why didn't you say so?" "Nobody asked me. Besides, it's obvious." "Oh, for heaven's sake. Let's get up. We'll be late for breakfast." Before we left the cubicle, I said, "Parlor games at the usual time this morning?" "Yes." "Mary, you never talk about what they ask you." She looked surprised. "But I never know." "That's what I gathered. Deep trance with a forget order, huh?" "I suppose so." "Well, there'll be some changes made. Today, I'm going in with you." All she said was, "Yes, dear." They were gathered as usual in Dr. Steelton's office. The old man, Steelton himself, and Colonel Gibbsby, who was chief of staff, a lieutenant colonel whom I knew only by sight, and an odd lot of sergeant technicians, JOs and flunkies. In the army, it seems to take an 8-man working party to help a brass hat blow his nose. That is one reason why I left the service. The old man's eyebrows shut up when he saw me, but he said nothing. A sergeant who seemed to be the doorman tried to stop me. "Good morning, Mrs. Niffins," he said to Mary. Then to me he added, "I don't seem to have you on the list." "I'm putting myself on the list," I announced to the entire room and pushed on past him. Colonel Gibbsy glared at me and turned to the old man with one of those "Humph! Humph! What's all this?" noises. The old man did not answer, but his eyebrows went still higher. The rest looked frozen-faced and tried to pretend they weren't there, except one whack sergeant who could not keep from grinning. The old man got up, said to Gibbsy, "Just a moment, Colonel," and limped over to me. In a voice that reached me alone, he said, "Son, you promised me." and I withdraw it. You had no business exacting a promise from a man about his wife. You were talking out of turn. You've no business here, son. You are not skilled in these matters. For Mary's sake, get out. Up to that moment, it had not occurred to me to question the old man's right to stay. But I found myself announcing my decision as I made it. You are the one with no business here. You are not an analyst, so get out. The old man glanced at Mary, and so did I. Nothing showed in her face. She might have been waiting for me to change. The old man said slowly, "You've been eating raw meat, son?" I answered, "It's my wife who is being experimented on. From here on, I make the rules, or there won't be any experiments." Colonel Gibbsy butted in, "Young man, are you out of your mind?" I said, "What's your status here?" I glanced at his hands and added, "That's a VMI ring, isn't it? Have you any other qualifications? Are you an MD or a psychologist?" He drew himself up and tried to look dignified. Pretty difficult dressed in your skin, unless your dignity is built in the way Mary's is. "You seem to forget that this is a military reservation. And you seem to forget that my wife and I aren't military personnel," I added. "Come on, Mary, we're leaving." "Yes, Sam," I added to the old man. "I'll tell the officers where to send our mail." I started for the door with Mary following me. The old man said, "Just a moment, as a favor to me." I stopped, and he went on to Gibbsy. "Colonel, will you step outside with me? I'd like a word in private." Colonel Gibbsy gave me a general court-martial look, but he went. We all waited. Mary sat down, but I did not. The juniors continued to be poker-faced. The lieutenant colonel looked perturbed, and the little sergeant seemed about to burst. Steelton was the only one who appeared unconcerned. He took papers out of his incoming basket and commenced quietly to work on them. It was 10 or 15 minutes later that a sergeant came in. "Dr. Steelton, the commanding officer says to go ahead." "Very well, Sergeant," he acknowledged, then looked at me and said, "Let's go into the operating room." I said, "Not so fast. Who are the rest of these supernumeraries? How about them?" I indicated the lieutenant colonel. "Eh? He's Dr. Hazelhurst, 2 years on Venus." "Okay, he stays." I caught the eye of the sergeant with a grin and said, "What's your job here, sister?" "Me? Oh, I'm sort of a chaperone." "I'm taking over the chaperone business. Now, doctor, suppose you sort out the spare wheels from the people you actually need for your work." "Certainly, sir." It turned out that he wanted no one but Colonel Hazelhurst. I gathered an impression that he was glad to get rid of the gallery. We went on inside. Mary, myself, and the two specialists. The operating room contained a psychiatrist's couch, surrounded by a semicircle of chairs. The double snout of a Tri-Dim camera poked unobtrusively out of the overhead. I suppose the mic was hidden in the couch. Mary went to the couch and sat down. Steelton got out an injector. "We'll try to pick up where we left off, Mrs. Niffins." I said, "Just a moment. You have records of the earlier attempts?" "Of course. Let's play them over first. I want to come up to date." He hesitated, then answered, "If you wish." "Mrs. Niffins, I suggest that you wait in my office. No, it will take quite a long time. Suppose I send for you later?" It was probably just the contrary mood I was in. Bucking the old man had gotten me hiked up with adrenaline. "Let's find out first if she wants to leave. Stilton looked surprised. I don't know what you're suggesting. These records would be emotionally disturbing to your wife, even harmful. Hazelhurst put in, very questionable therapy, young man. I said, this isn't therapy, and you know it. If therapy had been your object, you would have used identic recall technique instead of drugs. Stilton looked worried. There was no time for that. We had to use rough methods for quick results. I'm not sure that I can authorize the subject to see the records. Hazelhurst put in, I agree with you, Doctor. I exploded. Damn it! Nobody asked you to authorize anything, and you haven't got any authority in the matter. Those records were snitched right out of my wife's head, and they belong to her. I'm sick of you people trying to play God. I don't like it in a slug, and I don't like it any better in a human being. She'll make up her own mind whether or not she wants to see them, and whether or not I or anybody else will see them. Now, ask her. Stilton said, Mrs. Niffins, do you wish to see your records? Mary answered, yes, Doctor. I'd like very much to see them. He seemed surprised. To be sure, do you wish to see them by yourself? He glanced at me. My husband and I will see them. You and Dr. Hazelhurst are welcome to remain, if you wish. Which they did. Presently, a whole stack of tape spools were brought in, each labeled with attributed dates and ages. It would have taken us hours to go through them all. So I discarded those which concerned Mary's life after 1991. I could not see how they could affect the problem, and Mary could see them later if she wished. We started out with her very early life. Each record started with the subject, Mary, that is, choking and groaning and struggling the way people always do when they are being forced back on a memory track that they would rather not follow. Then would come the reconstruction, both in Mary's voice and in other voices. What surprised me most was Mary's face. In the tank, I mean. We had the magnification stepped up so that the stereo image of her face was practically in our laps, and one could follow each change of expression. First, her face became that of a little girl. Oh, her features were the same grown-up features, but I knew that I was seeing my darling as she must have been when she was very small. It made me hope that we would have a little girl ourselves. Then her expression would change to match when other actors out of her memory took over. It was like watching an incredibly able monologuist playing many parts. Mary took it with apparent serenity, but her hand stole into mine. When we came to the terrible part when her parents changed, became not her parents, but slaves of slugs. She clamped down on my finger so hard that it would have crushed a hand less ham-like than my own. But she controlled herself. I skipped over spools marked period of suspended animation. I was surprised to find that there were a great many of them. I would have thought that there was nothing to dig out of the memory of a person in such a condition. Be that as it may, I cannot see how she could have learned anything during that period which would tell us how the slugs had died, so I left them out and proceeded to the group concerned with the time from her resuscitation to the group concerned with her rescue from the swamps. One thing was certain from her expressions in the imaged record. She had been possessed by a slug as soon as she was revived. The dead quality of her face was that of a slug not bothering to keep up a masquerade. The stereocasts from Zone Red were full of that expression. The barren qualities of her memories from that period confirmed it. Then, rather suddenly, she was no longer hag-ridden, but was again a little girl. A very sick and frightened little girl. There was a delirious quality to her remembered thoughts, but at last a new voice came out loud and clear. Well, skin me alive, come Sunday.
Look, Pete, it's a little girl.
Another voice answered, Alive? And the first voice answered,
I don't know.
The rest of that tape carried on into Kaiserville, her recovery, and many new voices and memories. Presently it ended. I suggest, Dr. Steelton said as he took the tape out of the projector, that we play another one of the same period. They are all slightly different, and this period is the key to the whole matter.
Why, Doctor? Mary wanted to know.
Of course, you need not see them, if you don't want to, but this period is the one which we are actually investigating. From your memories, we must build up a picture of what happened to the parasites on Venus, why they died. In particular, if we could tell just what killed the Titan which, possessed you before you were found, what killed it and left you alive, we might well have the weapon we need.
But don't you know? Mary asked wonderingly.
Eh? Not yet. Not yet, but we'll get it. The human memory is an amazingly complete record, even though unhandy to use.
But I can tell you now. I thought you knew. It was 9-day fever.
What? Hazelhurst was out of his chair as if prodded.
But of course, couldn't you tell from my face? It was utterly characteristic. The mask, I mean. I saw it several times. I used to nurse it back home, back in Kaiserville, because I had had it once, and was immune to it.
Steelton said, How about it, Doctor? Have you ever seen a case of it?
Seen a case?
No, I can't say that I have. By the time of the second expedition, they had the vaccine for it. I'm thoroughly acquainted with its clinical characteristics, of course.
But can't you tell from this record?
Well, Hazelhurst answered carefully, I would say that what we have seen is consistent with it, but not conclusive.
Not conclusive.
What's not conclusive? Mary said sharply.
I told you, it was 9-day fever.
We must be sure, Steelton said apologetically.
How sure can you get? There is no question about it. I was told that I had had 9-day fever, that I had been sick with it when Pete and Frisco found me. I nursed other cases later, and I never caught it again. I remember what their faces looked like when they were ready to die, just like my own face in the record. Anyone who has ever seen a case never forgets it, and could not possibly mistake it for anything else.
What more do you want? Fiery letters in the sky?
I have never seen Mary so close to losing her temper.
Except once.
I said to myself, Look out, gentlemen. Better duck.
Steelton said, I think you have proved your point, dear lady. But tell me, you are believed to have no memory of this period, and my own experience with you leads me to think so. Now you speak as if you had direct, conscious memory.
Yes?
Mary looked puzzled. I remember it now. I remember it quite clearly. I haven't thought about it in many years.
I think I understand. He turned to Hazelhurst.
Well, Doctor? Do we have a culture of it in the laboratory? Have your boys done any work on it?
Hazelhurst seemed stunned.
Work on it? Of course not. It's utterly out of the question. 9-day fever? We might as well use polio or typhus. I'd rather treat a hangnail with an axe.
I touched Mary's arm and said, Let's go, darling. I think we have done all the damage we can.
As we left, I saw that she was trembling, and that her eyes were full of tears.
I took her into the mess room for systemic treatment. Distilled.
Later on, I bedded Mary down for a nap and sat with her until I was sure she was asleep. Then I looked up my father. He was in the office they had assigned to him. The green privacy light was already on.
Howdy, I said.
He looked at me speculatively.
Well, Elihu, I hear that you hit the jackpot.
I prefer to be called Sam, I answered.
Very well, Sam.
Success is its own excuse.
Nevertheless, the jackpot appears to be disappointingly small.
The situation seems to be almost as hopeless as before.
9-day fever.
No wonder the colony died out and the slugs as well.
I don't see how we can use it. We can't expect everyone to have Mary's indomitable will to live.
I understood him. The fever carried a 98% plus death rate among unprotected Earthmen. With those who had taken the shots, the rate was an effective zero. But that did not figure. We needed a bug that would just make a man sick, but would kill his slug.
I can't see that it makes much difference, I pointed out. It's odds on that you will have typhus, or plague, or both, throughout the Mississippi Valley in the next 6 weeks.
Or the slugs may have learned a lesson from the setback they took in Asia, and will start taking drastic sanitary measures, he answered.
I had not thought of that.
The idea startled me so that I almost missed the next thing he said, which was,
No, Sam, you'll have to devise a better plan than that.
I'll have to. I just work here.
You did once, but now you've taken charge.
I don't mind. I was ready to retire anyhow.
Huh? What the devil are you talking about?
I'm not in charge of anything.
Don't want to be. You are head of the section.
He shook his head.
A boss is the man who does the bossing. Titles and insignia usually come after the fact, not before.
Tell me, do you think Oldfield could take over my job?
I considered it and shook my head.
Dad's chief deputy was the executive officer type, a carry-outer, not a think-upper.
I've known that you would take over someday, he went on. Now you've done it, by bucking my judgment on an important matter, forcing your own on me, and by being justified in the outcome.